Welcome to the pod, everyone. A shout out to SGS.
Hey, Rusty, why are we partnering with SGS?
Some good people there. Pretty excited about their sports coaching courses and sports courses. Keen to make them industry ready, so when people leave, they're able to go and transfer it to any kind of industries, coaching, teaching, being an analyst, business, whatever it might be. So I think it's pretty exciting times, really.
So what's so special about their degree courses that others won't be doing?
I think it'll be lots of real good partnerships, opportunities for people to get into different contexts and learn and practice. It'll be feel very applied. People will be stretched and supported and will leave ready to just go and thrive in the big old world out there.
SGS College is the home of Bristol's higher education sports programmes. The programmes are designed to develop unique, innovative and creative sports practitioners ready for industry. Do you want to be a coach or teacher of the future? Start your journey here at SGS College and become more than just a graduate. Visit sgscol.ac.uk to apply now.
Welcome to the pod, everyone. Bit of a shout out to SGS who myself and Fletcher are going to do a little bit of work with, hopefully make it the most innovative, impactful, effective coaching qualification in the country, industry ready, experiential, backed up with all the science and the evidence stuff, and just a brief word from them beforehand.
SGS College is the home of Bristol's higher education sports programmes. The programmes are designed to develop unique, innovative and creative sports practitioners ready for industry. Do you want to be a coach or teacher of the future? Start your journey here at SGS College and become more than just a graduate. Visit sgscol.ac.uk to apply now.
Cool, Rusty here live on the pod. James Maybe, how are you, mate? You well?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, all good.
Excellent, and I've enjoyed already hearing that you've been doing analysis with Gloucestershire Cricket, and you also want to be an opera singer.
Yeah, tough sell. I'll try and make it work somehow.
Nice. Why opera singer?
So I've always been involved in choirs. I was one of those kids that my parents had chucked me into that sort of area, and it's kind of something that I've kept enjoying. I've had singing lessons since I was about 15. And my singing teacher was an opera singer himself. And then he was just like, yeah, just try some of this. And I carried on enjoying it. And I'm just going to keep rolling with the punches and see what happens.
Nice. Well, you look like you'd be a great singer. So.
Oh, yeah. Got the body shape for it, hey?
Got that. Cool. Well, do you want to get it going? Have you got here? What's the...
So I've been a cricket coach mainly since I was about 16. Not a great player. Fell into coaching because... it was something that my local cricket club offered. They were like, we need coaches on a Sunday morning for our under nines. So I started doing that. Kind of found something that I not only enjoyed and was all right at, I kind of managed to get through it. No one said I was rubbish yet, so I suppose I was doing all right. And then found myself coming out of school not really knowing what to do, and took kind of like 3 years out. And went, and I was lucky enough to travel to Australia, coach a bit of cricket out there, in a lovely private school, a great environment. Like the kids would have, if I said clap their hands, they would have clapped their hands. So it was just nice. It was very safe. And then came back and personal training for a year, and got into that and started enjoying coaching more. Found something that I really enjoyed, and then came to do a degree at Bath to study sports and social sciences, which is a little bit different to sports science, I suppose. We look at things from the very people point of view, and we look at lenses and social theory. So a lot of my assignments were looking at things like Marxism within sport or something like that, looking at how Olympics might change a demographic. And I chose to specialise in coaching science, and that's how I got here, really, I suppose.
Nice. What do you think those kids in Australia would say about you as a coach?
Stupid accent. I like to hope they thought I was fun. I suppose I look back on that 6 months that I spent with them. I wish I could change it all, but I can't. I was very young myself. I was very young as a coach. God, only been coached maybe 2 or 3 years, and love to do it all over again. Hopefully they would have enjoyed the fact that they had a younger face and it wasn't just a teacher telling them what to do. I think that was what was probably got me on board with them quickly, is that I was a young British lad, come over, literally first session off a plane, it was pissing down with rain. And I thought, I haven't signed up for this. And they were lovely kids. Look, you know, the school were building a $5 million sports complex. They were there for a reason.
What would you change if you went back?
Wouldn't have been so serious, I think, in times. They were competitive, but try and facilitate the competitiveness in a different way. I would have done more fun games with them and less fielding drills, because I think cricket is sometimes too easy to do drills. Too easy. I would create more games out of it, just and let me sit back as a coach and not feel the heat sometimes of going, I don't know what I'm doing right now. How do I manage this? And instead of getting a playbook out of what drills I can do with them, just say, right, let's play a game of this. We were lucky enough to maybe out of the 20 sessions I might have done with them, two of them we played a game because there was a grass wicket that was cut. But otherwise it was nets, it was drills, it was things that I look back on and going, was that really necessary? Could I have done that a little bit differently? And the answer is probably yes. Would I have known how to do it? No, but that's okay. I was lucky enough that because I was part of a company that, so the school paid a company to invest, to get me there. It was a weird situation. I also had a teacher that was like the team manager, but he was great. He was doing a PhD in education and he was like the best thing. I just absorbed as much as I could standing next to him.
Nice. And probably my piece of advice is if you're feeling stressed about stuff, then probably don't intervene at that point.
They might
find their flow while you're...
Yeah. And I think as a young man, when I was coaching, I don't think I had that ability. I think I wasn't there yet. So I thought I had to, because I suppose all my experience before that, that was kind of the thing that I would do.
What's been the impact of the uni stuff that you've been doing then? So,
So it's kind of opened my eyes. I think coming off the back of doing a sports coaching qualification, I think it was called UKCC level 2, you're able to coach as much as you'd want to about 24 kids. And I think, does that really arm you? And I think to coach, I don't think the answer is yes, but I think that the degree has helped me to kind of center what I want as a values for coaching and understand. I think I really didn't have a lot of understanding about how people learn. And I think that was a massive thing that, so my sport coaching lectures were centered around two guys, Ant Bush and Sean Williams. So I knows you, Rusty. Just loves sport, loves coaching. And he could talk for hours on end about it. But I think he solidified kind of the thoughts around, we've got to get people active, we've got to get people engaged. And I don't think that had been sold to me before. My experiences before in the local cricket club with working with people who had just got the same qualification as I have. It's not there yet. And I think it really opened my eyes to how we can challenge people in a positive way.
What would be your top two or three things that you think the degrees, you know, you would like to pass that information to that young lad that arrived on a rainy day in Australia?
Don't stop, do as much coaching as you can because you learn the most you can from that. Be okay with being uncomfortable, and the kids know more than you think.
I definitely do. I would probably argue we probably need to seek being more uncomfortable as well.
Actually, yeah.
I'm not too uncomfortable, but
that
karaoke moments that I'm...
Yeah, absolutely. I think so much learning comes from feeling like I have got no idea what's about to happen next, but that's okay. I'm going to live and die by the consequence of my actions. And as a young man, I think if you look at the young coaches out there, I think that's what I'd say. Just be okay with doing something different. And I think also that comes with a byproduct of, you know, being okay in yourself. I think I learned about myself doing coaching. And I think that was a transition that I made. It's interesting. The classic quote, I went to teach, but I learned more. That's kind of, I suppose that's how I define my journey. I've learned so much about myself just by coaching and helping others.
Nice. Two things there. One, Ed Hall's kind of imagined future, like, just don't assume you know what's going to happen, especially with the kids.
Yeah.
And the second one, exactly what you said there, and I've been referencing Suzanne Brown a bit. I had an hour with her about 2 weeks ago that definitely helped me understand myself even more, which is ultimately, I think, the quest, one of the big quests of coaching, if not the quest of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got very philosophical. I like it. What?
Yeah.
And then what were your experiences like at Gloucestershire?
Yeah. So I was really lucky that Mark Thorburn, who runs the Gloucestershire placement, it was mainly a sports analysis placement, but because of how it works, I was pretty much there to help anyone and everyone. So I was really lucky that I got to spend a bit of time at the Gloucestershire Academy in terms of seeing how they did some training sessions and how they kind of worked, which as a local club cricket coach, we constantly get asked by parents, oh, I want my son to be in the academy. I want him to play the next level up. It's like, hang on a minute. And I never saw an academy session before, but it was really nice to see kind of the environment. And also not the gap, I think that's a really negative way of saying it, but there is a lot different between academy coaching and the local club that I think we could do more as a sport to kind of bridge a little bit more. But yeah, the Gloucestershire internship, it was all about sports analysis. So my main role was to live code all the games of cricket that would happen at Gloucestershire. And so every county would have one. I have to click every ball's being bowled, start the video clip, click where it lands on the pitch, who hits it, where it goes, who fields it, what happens in that ball, how many runs and stuff like that. And then that gets uploaded to a database. So if you're Surrey versus Middlesex across the road, you can see my live coding, you can analyse teams while you're playing other games. And then also, because we are the T20, I was there to provide pre-match analysis for the team, and also work with the S&C coaches for the wellness and workloads. So yeah, there was a hell of a lot that blew my mind out the whole year. And it was always the first time I've been part of professional sport, and it was always a kind of a goal of mine just to at least see behind the doors a little bit.
Nice. It'd be cool when computers can live code it. I bet you.
Oh, mate. Unbelievable. I mean, the scorers were already worried that they were getting young faces doing the professional scorers are worried that they think that analysis are going to take over the scoring role. So we're going to have one person and it's probably going to be a younger face and an older face. And yeah, it was interesting hearing their insights, because I still think that the art of scoring is there. Like, and the amount of times that I might have got something wrong and going, scorers, what happened that ball? I just need to go and get the video clip back again. But yeah, no, it's a team effort just to get a game of cricket going. Hey,
nice. What was impactful in the stuff you measured in cricket? I'm always curious. So where do you feel like analysts have impact? Because that's a lot of data. There's a lot of isolated moments in a game. Where do you feel like you would have impact?
So it's in the varying formats, I think, have varying degrees of importance. So in the county championship over the 4-day stuff, I would say, the analysis is not used, but in my perception, there's more use in the T20 formats. So in the T20 stuff, the pre-match preparation, I would do a slideshow on every batsman before the game. So if we were playing, God, Surrey, you'd have a slide. I'd give the players a slide of Jason Roy's, where he hits from, who he hits to, what percentage, where is he usually likely to get out, things like that. So the bowlers kind of know, and they look at that in the team bus. For the batting side, they didn't want where the bowlers would usually bowl. They just want to see video clips of the action. For them, it was a visualization process of the pre-match analysis, just to see what the bowlers are trying to do and what sort of areas are they trying to hit. I think adding to that, it's kind of difficult because, so the analysis coding becomes even stronger if the actual analysis are confident in their ability to pick the bowler's variations, especially in T20. I think that was, so I could click and filter all slower ball variations. The issue is that sometimes the analysis and didn't do that, or they did and it was just inconsistent. So I think what I'd like to see in the couple of years is the ECB invest a little bit of money to say, look, we'll pay the analysis, because I was a placement student and like many counties, they couldn't afford a full-time analysis. So I'd like to see maybe a pay position and people do it for more than one season. And then you get more consistency of analysis for the T20 stuff, and you could pick out more and filter more and get a bit more data. But in terms of how the coaches use it, they just use it for video clips because you're unable to stop and freeze frame. And it was really interesting seeing the way that maybe batting coach would come and speak to a player who just got out. He's lost his nut. He's back in the hut. He's sitting next to me in the changing room. You're hearing all the screams. You're just like, oh God, not again. He's sat there. He's watching through all the balls of his innings, whether it's 2 balls or 100 balls. And he's just looking through. And then a coach might wander around near him and go, so what do you think went wrong? And what was nice is that the group of coaches that I work with, they were very people-led. They were very much, right, what are you seeing here? And the players either ask the coach a question, whether am I right or did they agree? And more often than not, they did agree, because I think the players have worked with these younger kids for so long. But it was nice to see, it was good that the coaches didn't come and berate, or it was just an open, honest discussion about, right, you just didn't move your feet or something like that.
Yeah, wow. It's a sport where lots of people inside their head.
Oh, God. And it was interesting because there were a couple of matches that didn't go away. And because I was the only one sitting in the first team dressing room, because I had kind of this glass screen that I was looking at the game. But behind me, it was all the changing room. And you just hear, so just, I was just like, is this guy okay? And the coach was like, if he's making noise, he's fine. If he's quiet, that's when you flip him worry. He's just sitting there on his own, just like, do you say something? What do you say? You know, and more often than not, I just kept quiet. And if they engage in conversation, then that's their choice.
How did they use psychology?
So we were lucky. So we had, I wish I could remember his surname, Dave, the guy who works at Bristol Rugby Psychology, Dave. He came in maybe 1 or 2 days a week, if that. Sometimes come on match day, sometimes come on a training day. And he'd facilitate around the group. He'd know who he'd want to talk to that day. So whether it be bookings, the players would book in with them. And he'd just talk to them about their goals and then talk to their head coach. And I think some of the players really got on board with it. Some of the players, I don't think, ever spoke to the man, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, so his role was very much kind of moonlighting in, moonlighting out, but the players knew they had someone they could speak to.
Nice. And what are your rugby experiences? So just to give context,
So when I was eight, when I was rubbish at rugby, had loads of injuries, just nowhere near anywhere sort of decent club wise. And then picked up a whistle because my PE teacher offered me at PE GCSE. It was like, oh, well, you can get graded in officiating for PGCSE. Would you like to do a refereeing course? I was like, okay, cool. And fell in love with it. Well, some days you fall in love with it, some days you don't. And started refereeing like under 12s at my school, secondary school, and then joined a society and then started doing some adult stuff. So at the moment, I'm part of Bristol Referee Society. I referee sides like Cleve, Thornbury, like level 6 rugby. So some good club rugby. And yeah, so it's good fun. It is good fun, but it's interesting seeing coaching from a different point of view, because you're like a fly on the wall. No one really expects you to be there, and you're listening to these conversations. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, you would have an understanding of coaching. Therefore, you'd be. What have you noticed? What's the good stuff? Let's start with the good stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So the good stuff is the coaches that allow the players to have autonomy. And you notice, and I think referees, you notice the culture and ethos more so. So the clubs that are doing well or performing well are the clubs that have a strong leadership in terms of a captain that speaks to the referee, or a coach that knows exactly what's going on and is kind of switched on. The amount of times I turn up to some rugby clubs, or whether it's juniors or seniors, and the coach just looks at you like, you're the referee, why do I need to speak to you? It's like, hang on a minute, mate, I'm here to help. I'm not here. So the clubs that have a switched on coach and welcome you and say, oh, great to see you, that's always nice. And you can always tell if the clubs are in good shape if you don't hear a lot of abuse on the side. I think the sides that you just go and you're like, this is not a nice club ethos, are usually ones that are struggling. I think I would say there's a correlation.
Yeah, I won't ask you to name any names.
No. But
what would be your one piece of advice to clubs around referees, if you could give them?
Make them feel welcome, number one. So there's a Thornbury Rugby Club. The referees have a trophy that we call the Whistler's Trophy. We have to submit a what's your favourite club to go to? And Thornbury seem are either there or thereabouts most years. And they're just a lovely local club. Tom Luke's the head coach there.
Enjoy that shout out.
Mate, he's in fantastic shape as well. What lockdown's done well for him. So he's great, like, and I think what's really nice about Tom is that he might not agree with everything that I do on the pitch, but there or thereabouts I'll be at least as fair as I can be and consistent as I can be. And after the game I'll go, so Tom, any thoughts? And he'll just say it in a really analytical way. He won't go, oh, you were shit or you were this and that. It was just, I thought you could have maybe looked at the offside a little bit more, or that yellow card hurt us or whatever. And he'd be so frank about it, and he'd just go on facts. I think the coaches that don't do that, and the coaches that, I suppose, are just very emotional at that point after losing. And it's tough. It's a tough skill.
Yeah.
But the ones that are analytical post-game are usually the ones that are then going to help their side develop the next week, I would say.
Yeah, it's good advice to them. And then so to link that in, really, so you've got a you've been in touch with a few coaches who've used the Magic Academy card.
Yeah.
And kind of used that as a bit of your dissertation.
Yeah.
Small number of coaches. Definitely keen to hear what your thoughts were. I've read your dissertation. I'll put it up on the Magic maybe in the next couple of days, and
I've done a little poster on it as well. So if people don't want to read 10,000 words, I can do it. I've done a little poster just to summarise it all, because I know that's probably a nice image.
I read that in 25 minutes this morning.
Oh, mate. Hey, you doing well?
He's reading.
Yeah, you're more academic than most, hey? But yeah, so the dissertation came about by looking at your work, Rusty. I actually found your work through, it was the Brighton College Game Changers that Eddie Jones did. It was spotlight on Eddie Jones, and you were one of the coaches. And that kind of blew my mind a little bit with the headbands and just watching kids run about for 30 minutes and call that a coaching session. It was just nice to see. But yeah, and that's how I kind of saw, that was my first experience of your work. And then I started Googling a little bit more, got stuck in Twitter, found a little rabbit hole of Twitter where there are loads of coaches engaging. It was great to see. And it was a part of Twitter that I hadn't seen before. And this was maybe 2 years ago. Probably been going on for much longer than that.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Because it's probably the bubble I exist in. And
yeah,
a couple of webinars recently, and people have asked me what's the thing that you're loving the most, and I just said the coaches are really engaged and want to get better, and like there's this whole uprising of just young adult coaches who are trying to get better. One of the things that came up in your thing, and we'll definitely talk about it, is some of those people, however, would have a challenging context where they go and coach with someone else. So,
yeah.
Which can also make it really frustrating for them.
We'll come back to that later. But yeah, so I came onto your stuff, Rusty, and I saw these magic cards. I was like, okay, these look interesting. And I used it as a way to get a dissertation topic out of it. So for those that haven't seen it yet, The title is Evaluating the Impact of the Magic Academy Coaching Cards on Coaching Practice. And because I'm a social scientist and I come from that background, I went through the semi-structured interview route. And it was because nothing's been written about these cards in research yet. And I hope, and hopefully this is a pilot study, and hopefully we get more data on this sort of stuff. Because I think we're still trying to build this body of evidence for coaching practice.
Nice. Well, we can definitely make it more than a 10,000 word of
yeah.
What? I'll read the book. What did you find out?
Yeah, so I interviewed three coaches across the Bristol area, all working with an amateur level rugby, really key for that to be said, and I had two junior age grade coaches and one senior coach at level A. And after the three interviews, I had four themes. So coach development, coaching pedagogy and kind of techniques, perceptions of the Magic Academy coaching cards, and that kind of links in with the context, and then also the culture and ethos of their coaching style. And those are the four areas that kind of they focused on more so than others. I think also what's key is that those are the four key themes out of all three of them. There was obviously loads of other good stuff within the hour interview that I clocked up. Couldn't write about it all. And it showed that the Magic Academy coaching cards aid coaching practice. And I think it's really easy for a non-academic point of view to look at those cards and go, yeah, okay, I can see that. But I suppose it's then adding some evidence to that. And it was a lot of it. The main theme was culture and ethos. So all the coaches expressed a drive for a learning environment. In academia, it's motivational climate or less results driven. And I think that was the main thing. And it was interesting. I took a quote from one of the coaches, Tony. He said, an old fossil had a pop at me, so I changed my style. And I think those are the sort of voices that we need a little bit more in academia. I think we're still trying to build that body of evidence and we want the real perceptions, because I think that's what I mentioned in kind of literature review. There's like a theory practice gap. There's academics who maybe have never stepped on a coaching field writing about coaching, telling me all about this learning theory. And then there are coaches going, have you actually been on a coaching field? Do you know what it's like when you're running at 1,000 miles an hour, trying to herd 15 boys to chuck a rugby ball about? So the four themes. And I think what was really interesting is that one of the coaches expressed a real difficulty trying to work against the whole traditional coaching role and people still perceiving that games are just games and learning doesn't take place. And I think that's also what I wanted to try and break through a little bit, is that yes, they're games, but actually the kids are learning a hell of a lot more that we don't see. And hopefully that comes out a little bit.
Yeah, nice. Andy Abraham up at Leeds talks, he lectures and he's an expert in coaching, and he also coaches on a Sunday morning. And he said, like, that kind of theory practice gap when you've got, you know, a 10 by 10 and 50 kids and they've just come back from half term and they're wild and the balls haven't been pumped up and all of that stuff is the reality, I guess, of lots of coaching. Couple of things I wanted to pick up. Actually, one of the things that I guess was something that I think about, and I do know that people use them at high, you know, whatever we call higher levels.
Yeah.
I assume you mean it like more of that.
Yeah, professional or whatever. Yeah.
Professional. Was what's your sense around why people might think they're not applicable at that level?
So a few conversations. So when I was looking for my sample size and when I was talking to coaches around the area, some of them had, they were not as keen on the cards, shall we say, as some other coaches. And they said a common theme was, well, two of them said, I feel like if I couldn't do the skills that are on the cards, I wouldn't be where I am already, was a quote. And it was interesting. I was like, okay, fair enough. That's your personal opinion. That's fine. You don't use the cards. I don't need you for my dissertation. That conversation ended pretty quickly.
I can't do all the skills on the cards.
No, I know. Look, and it was, that's fine. I think I would love to see someone who, I suppose my perception of elite sport is that it is very results driven for a good reason. People are paying money for results. And I would say that maybe these cards are not as prescriptive as that coach thought they are.
Yeah, maybe we do need to do some, I'm not sure people at the elite level, but if we called them, you know, guaranteed to make you win matches cards.
Yeah. Oh, mate. Fucking millions. Here we go.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what about like the kind of the culture context stuff? What are you hearing? What are you noticing about that?
Yeah, so it was interesting. So Tim, one of the coaches, had a really interesting perception. And it was a long old quote and I used a lot of words for it. It was for the fact that he lost a kid from his team because the parent thought that they were too Magic Academy aligned, or they were too centered around this whole games and just nowhere near the fact that they want to win some games in terms of being competitive and stuff. So he lost a boy because of that, and it was driven by the parent. He was really keen to say that I don't think the kid wanted to go. I don't think the kid wanted to leave it, but the parent was like, no, we don't think that you're right for our son. It's like, hang on a minute. But yeah, so it was interesting to hear that perception, because I didn't think that was going to come out. I thought maybe parents would be really on board, because I think a large part of the Magic Academy cards is that you do engage with parents. You are trying to help them along the sort of coach, the journey with the kids. And I think that's really important about building relationships and stuff. And So yeah, that was a perception I didn't think was going to come out. But I think overall, the coach would express a fact that they've got a, the traditional coaching role is one that probably shouts and does drills and tells people what to do. And I think they're still trying to work really hard in the local level clubs. Now that maybe isn't the most positive within coaching.
Yeah, it reminded me of, and there's a kid at I was coaching at Old Bristolians a while back, and he left because of his dad.
And it just hurts me a little bit.
Since then, he's been to about five different clubs.
Oh, funny that, isn't it?
I was absolutely gutted. Mm. However, it was because his son couldn't play 10. He couldn't play every match. He couldn't do all the kicking. It was so, you know, it was definitely best for all the other lads because his dad was getting in the way a little bit.
Yeah. And I think we all know those sorts of dads or mums or parents. I think we all know those sorts of kids. It's just, you got to, that's a huge challenge that I don't think gets written about in academia at all. There, and I hope that gets, you know, heard a little bit.
What was the stuff you heard that got you most kind of excited? What was the...
The games, I think the amount of... So Tony, one of the coaches, he was... What I loved about it, he would use his games and then get the guys to level it up for him. So although he had loads of levels within the cards and loads of ways that he constrained that he could manipulate the game to provide more benefit, what was great is that it went, a lot of the time, the players just make it harder for themselves. And I think that's probably the best sort of coaching you want. You just want to let it happen in front of you. That's my opinion. And it's also, there's less heat on you as a coach. The learning happens because players want to be better, want to work harder. That's all you want.
Yeah, I wrote down some kind of keywords that I read in your disc. One was autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was stimulus. So actually, I do think they're a stimulus. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. We're just giving people opportunity to try some stuff that they might not have thought about. And if that involves kind of engaging with parents or reflection or interacting in different ways with the kids or designing games around computer games or whatever it might be, it may just lead them to. So, and obviously I know John, who's one of the coaches, and like some of the stuff he puts out on Twitter is like, I'm now learning from him.
Oh, mate. So yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. The games that he's created and the way that he's gone into matches, that was one of the, it was a perception that I tried to get in because I thought it was brilliant. Going to a local club that you hate and saying, look, can we just play a different game here and not play a match? He's got flipping balls, I can tell you that, just to do that. You know, and we need people like John in the local game.
I would want my kids to be coached by John.
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be a hell of a lot of fun, wouldn't it? But I suppose, but then the caveat is that John had co-coaches that were not Magic Academy aligned or were not part of the same way of thinking. And that was his major challenge. That was his barrier that he had to almost, it was probably for the kids, it was like Jekyll and Hyde coaching, possibly. I never got to observe a session, which is what I was keen to do, but it ended up because we had the worst month of rain and snow and whatever. I couldn't in the end, but it was, it sounded like he has to wait for a set coach to do this. And then he goes, okay, that ain't clearly working. we'll just have to move this on now. And then he puts in a game and funnily enough, it starts working. So yeah, I think for him, that's a tough challenge. But I would say that that's a skill of a coach as well now. More coaches are being in teams. It's less one-man bandish nowadays.
Yeah, he's having to influence some other coaches.
And
choose his moments. He'll get there. He'll get there. What about the competitive element? So that was something else I wrote down was like more competitive. I wrote down like people's sense might be that I'm not that excited about. But I'm really excited about competitiveness. Like I think it's the best players and have that skill. However, I'm not that excited about some of the unintended consequences of competition.
Yes. Yeah, I think I could have explained that a little bit more. I think I wish I did in the dissertation, but I would say, although we're saying, so yes, we want to win games. That's cool. And we're trying to say that the practices and the games that we create through the practices are more competitive, and it's not just one kid running through breaking all these tackles and no one learning anything. That's the game, is to be as even as possible and to challenge as many people. And that's how the competition grows. Because I think a lot of sports people are the same. If there's competition involved, it kind of gets them going. And even on my degree, like, we were asked to do some practical elements, and there was a mixed range of varying abilities, fitness levels or whatever. And we were asked to do sports. Like, we played ultimate frisbee for a lecture, and everyone thought that they didn't want to be competitive. No one really wanted to try hard. But as soon as we got competition going in that game, everyone's eyes got open and the game started being so much more enjoyable. I think that's what we're trying to work towards. It's games. Yes, you're not going to win every game, but it's having competition in those games that's going to incite better learning and engage people, engage kids, engage people to try. Because you don't want the kids standing on the side doing F all.
True story. Another person you referenced is Sophia Jowett. So,
oh, yeah. So she's great. She's got, yeah, she's, I follow her on Twitter now. She does a lot on the coach-athlete relationship, and I'd urge any coach just to have a look at that. She works at Loughborough Uni at the moment, and yeah, I'm a massive, like, she's really trying to help the body of evidence of coaching and what it really is. And it is relationships, and it is building those bonds, and it's trying to steer an athlete to the goal. And also Sam Carr, who's doing stuff on attachment theory within sport. So he's also one. So he did a paper in 2011 on attachment theory, and just kind of highlighting that it's prevalent, and hopefully we get a little bit more on it. Those two guys, I would say, are your must reads.
Nice. What did you notice about the cards in terms of kind of athlete coach relationship? What did you hear from the coaches?
So I think in practice, some coaches who are maybe not as people driven as they could be struggle sometimes with, maybe it's like an icebreaker. I think the cards formed as an icebreaker for a lot of the coaches, or just giving a kid another card or a challenge starts a conversation between them. And John said in his interview, he was like, sometimes kids would run back at me and say, oh, I've done this challenge, and he's just forgotten about the challenge at that point. But that's okay, because they're inciting a discussion. That's cool. I think the amount of times that I've been coached by someone and felt like I couldn't speak to the coach, because otherwise I'd be shouted at or told off or being told that I wasn't doing well enough. So what's great about these cards is they just help the bond a little bit. They're icebreakers. They keep it going instead of going, I'm the coach, I'm going to tell you how to play the game, let's get on with it. It's, hang on a minute. You know, I think that was the main positive of that. And so if you are a coach that struggles engaging with your team, I would really suggest picking up a pack just to help stimulate something, just to get it going.
Yeah, I agree with that. How you must have thought about this. How would you use them? So clearly people use them in different ways. And,
yeah.
You know, there's some of the coach ones, coaches kind of choose them for each other, or they get the players to choose them, or you might have a theme for a week or a month or whatever it would be. What you must have thought about how they would suit your coaching. What would you do?
Yeah, I think so. I would say that you look at the whole pack as a whole. I think I would, for like the primer stuff, I think that's really interesting, getting people ready for training sessions, especially at the local level, because it's really easy to say, oh, I haven't got time for that. And I think the prime stuff is just sending out maybe something like, this is what we're going to do for the training session. Get people excited. That would be there are a lot of cards and lots of challenges, but that's how I would take the prime time. Yeah. Because I think there's not enough of that. Getting people excited before the train and making people want to train. So we're going, oh, bloody hell, it's 6:30. I need to get there for 7. We don't need that. I think for me, it's the in-game, the training stuff. For me, the coaching cards really come into play when I want to level up the game. I'm like, right, this player struggles with this. How do I get him to here? Well, if I give him this card or this challenge, this might help him explore space and time or whatever, and then get him to that position. I think for me, that's how the cards really work for me. It's the leveling up of everything and making it harder for the players. Because I think a lot of coaches struggle with, how do I get this player better? Well, actually, the cards fling a few challenges out there and just see what happens.
Yeah. I think that would be my challenge to lots of people, is how do you do stretch? I was trying to get you to pick your favourite cards. Did you?
Invisibility card. Absolutely love that card. If there was one card that I really like, it's the invisibility one. Because I think I was always, in training sessions, the kid that maybe stood at the side a little bit and wasn't sure how to get engaged. And I wasn't confident enough in myself. And I think that that is a skill of a coach, but that is a card that could be used a hell of a lot more, because I think there are more kids that don't get noticed a little bit more. I think if there was one card that I pick out, that would be it.
Yeah, and those are, when you talk about kind of being a bit of a kind of a, the icebreakers, then those are the kids. I mean, these, the cards are definitely designed to help those kids who are missing absolutely out on opportunities.
Yeah, and then you discover something amazing about this child that you thought just wasn't really engaging in session, probably thought it didn't like coming to rugby or whatever sport you're playing. And then funnily enough, you get them involved in the game, they're engaging, and they've got a whole skill set that you didn't know you had in your team. You know, how would I just you think make, that's magic.
How would you make them better?
Oh, that's a good thing. I think...
bear in mind, you've got first iteration. I've got the coach challenge card. So my favourite card is this reflective one around with your co-coaches, complete the following. I discovered that, I struggled with, I really appreciated, I wish I had. Next time I will. And actually, what I also have been thinking a bit about this one is, I don't want people to assume that this is just at the end of training. This could be 10 minutes in, 20 minutes in. This could be actually, so we get used to reflecting a bit more in action.
Yeah. I think my two things I think I would say is, there was I don't know if you already do, Russell, but have a video on how to use these cards a little bit more.
Yeah, have a bit more. There are some videos. They're on YouTube, but we don't publicise them enough. That's good feedback.
Yeah, I think that would, because I think there is almost a given level of coaching knowledge that you need to have to be able to use them.
Yeah.
Because I think if I was a new coach and I go back to 18-year-old James or 19-year-old James in Australia, I would feel overwhelmed by some of these cards. And that's okay. You're not going to use all of them at the same time. I get that. But I think a video of going, okay, me and Fletch, we have this child or this player that struggles with this. Here are two or three cards that we would say would be really good. Have a think about those. Something like that. A little bit more prescriptive. And I know you probably don't want to lean that way.
No, but I think, however I'm writing that down. So I appreciate the feedback.
I think that. And I also think, so some of the coaching cards in the literature that had been reviewed before me were all about getting coaches to write down reflection stuff. Maybe having like a Magic Academy coaching card notebook, or like a free design your own card, like a template. So you can create your own cards and make them look as cool as these. And so you can go, actually, I know I've got this card in the locker that I made myself last week. Let's bring it back in, or another notebook for reflection. So adding on to the after training stuff.
I love the way you're telling us stuff that we always keep saying we're going to do and we never do. Because we're in the moment too much.
Yeah.
That's good feedback.
Yeah. And I think, you know, some coaches, I think that was the issue with some of the cards that were reviewed in the literature. They said that they took too long to use. But I think that's a massive benefit of these cards, is that they are in the moment. They are getting out of your pocket, right, let's flick through them, let's try and use them. Instead of making a coach reflect and write down all the time after every practice, that he or she sees that as probably time consuming. But actually, I think there is a middle ground. I'm not sure what it looks like, but there is a middle ground between lots of really good reflection post-training, but also lots of in-the-moment good coaching.
Yeah, and I guess for me, how I would use them is, I would probably have a group that I would use relatively regularly.
Yes, absolutely.
I would often give them to the kids before training and go, look, give me, you know, let me know which ones would be useful for this group.
Ah, cool. Okay. That's a nice way of looking
at it. I'm halfway through, so if I do a guest session, I'll go, look, I've got some cards split into three or four groups. Each group gets to pick a card that we do in the remainder of the session. So I just get feedback from the kids, really.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard loads of people use them in different ways. People have used them almost like a game within a game, and they've been on a whiteboard next to the pitch, and you grab a challenge that you want to do, and then you can put a cross on for your team. And awesome. So we just, in a really playful way, kids get a bit of choice, so they choose what they do. They get it done. They actually get some reward for it, and then we can go, well, oh, cool, which cards did you pick? Why did you pick them? What did you?
Yeah,
people would be. I guess that's one of the reasons I don't want to. And I do know people share online how they do use them. but I was I wouldn't want to take away people's kind of creativity around it.
Yeah, and almost the unknown helps the creativity, hey?
Yeah, and so the other one that I've really liked is just, you know, kids telling other kids what they're good at and saying, look, I want to see you do more of this, and giving them the card. So that peer-to-peer positive stuff is really important, especially with the with the teenage brain stuff. Wow, that's cool, mate. 10,000 words. Amazing. Yeah. You'll be 100,000 on the next one. You've got me really excited, actually, and definitely got me thinking about what we could do next time around this. What's your kind of, if you could leave one message, what would it be for coaches?
Oh,
no pressure.
One message. Kids don't remember the amount of times they won a game, games in seasons. They remember the amazing moments. Create more of those.
Create amazing moments. I'll have that. I'm all in. Yeah. Mate, look, it's been a pleasure. I'm glad we finally got it done. I'm definitely going to, I'm going to joke some notes over to you the next 24 hours around the the next stuff. And then good luck with the opera singing in the meantime.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I'll try. Hey.
Mate, top man, have a great day.
Yeah, and you, mate. Cheers, bud.